Welcome to the Karen Conti Show on 720 WGN.
Good evening, everyone. We're in a new world, aren't we? I feel like everywhere I go and everyone I talk to feels like they're in outer space. From the cab driver who took me here, who was crying about how he's not going to be able to feed his family of six, and people just up in the air with what they have to do and what they're going to do. But, you know, I think we're trying to take the bright side of this. We're going to try to use our time that is going to be alone and maybe use it constructively. And I struggled with this show tonight because I was wondering if I should talk about the coronavirus because we're really talked out about it for sure. But I also think it's important for you to get as much information as you can, as often as you can, because we've had changes in the last 48 hours about how our employment's going to go, how our eating out is going to go, how our transportation is going to go. So I think it's very important that I do some of this stuff. But at 7:35, I'm going to have a wonderful guest. Today is the Ides of March, and I'm going to have Chicagoland's very own Jim Peterick, who is the founder and lead singer for the Ides of March, who sang all kinds of great songs like Eye of the Tiger and Vehicle and a bunch of other great songs that he wrote and sang. So we're going to have him, and then we're going to be talking at 8 o'clock about the employment law that was just passed by the federal government that's going to affect tens of millions of people in the workplace. So hopefully we'll be able to answer some of your questions about that. But let's start right now with a very interesting topic, and that is, how are our children doing when it comes to what's going on? And I brought in an expert, clinical psychologist in the Anxiety Disorder Center at the Child Mind Institute, Dr. Janine Dominguez. She's specifically interested in helping children and families affected by trauma, as well as children with anxiety and social phobia. Welcome to the show, Dr. Dominguez.
Thank you for having me.
So the news is so pervasive, and even more now than last week. We have children staying at home. They're being ordered to stay at home. Parents are now being ordered to stay at home. They see it on TV. They're talking amongst their friends. They're seeing it on the internet. How is it that we should help our children get through what might be traumatic for them?
Sure. So I think first I would recommend parents not shying away from talking about the coronavirus with their kids and really utilizing this as an opportunity to set the emotional tone with them, really filter the information and providing the facts about the virus. And that can even be starting the conversation by taking your child's lead first and asking them what they know about it, what they think, and that way it provides you with the ability to correct misinformation and also provide factual information that they would need.
So if they show fear and they seem to be upset about it, and maybe they're crying or they're spouting misinformation that they heard that everyone's going to die, how is it that you tone this down with them?
Yeah, so I think first you want to provide some validation around those feelings and say something like, I know this can feel scary, and we're also doing all we can to stay healthy. And that's really rooting them in the things that they can do, which is practicing healthy hygiene, washing their hands frequently, singing the happy birthday song when they do so. And I think also reassuring them that most people who get the virus are fine, and we're all just, as adults around them, taking care of the fact that they're healthy and safe at this time.
And I suppose part of that, too, Dr. Dominguez, is to avoid being stressed out yourself, because I know that in my practice as a family law lawyer, I know that when parents are stressed out about the divorce or about different issues, the kids pick up on it. Whether the parents are actually talking about it or not, they can sense it with their parents. Kids know when there's something up. Is that fair to say?
Right. Kids often vibe off their parents. So really, you need to practice calmness and confidence when talking about the virus with your kids. I think it's also a good opportunity as a family to practice ways of staying calm and de-stressing and self-soothing as a family. But really, for yourself, take care of yourself so that way you can be the best when it comes to handling this with your children.
As a person who treats young children who have anxiety issues, if something is untreated, say an anxiety issue like this or school shootings or something like that, is affecting a child at a young age and the parents are not treating it correctly, or maybe even professionals are not getting involved when they should, how does that affect a child into adulthood?
Yeah, so what we know that the research shows, untreated anxiety can often predispose a child or an adolescent to going on to having other mental health difficulties, and can impair functioning around social interactions, school academics. So it is really important to connect with proper treatment and effective treatment, and really, as a whole, destigmatize mental health and really have that open dialogue.
And just quickly, I see this all the time. I sense, and you're going to tell me if this is true or not, that you see a lot of young adults undergoing extreme anxieties that I didn't see growing up myself. And I've heard people say, oh, it's about terrorism and being exposed to school shootings. Is it social media? Is it helicopter parenting where kids are anxious because now they can't do anything on their own? To what do you attribute this kind of, it seems to me, an increased occurrence of anxiety?
I do think environment certainly plays a role in the increased anxiety. I think when it comes, for example, to social media, kids already who are pre-exposed to anxiety and depression may be at a greater risk for increase if they're engaging in a lot of social media. Certainly the political climate, even now as we go into a new election year, that can certainly increase anxiety. But I see it as an opportunity, again, to raise awareness, really talk about mental health as regular health, and be able to connect to those outlets that will provide effective treatment.
Dr. Dominguez, one last quick question. Kids are home and parents may be home too. What do you do? What are some suggestions to keep your kids anxiety free and in a good state of mind as they possibly can be?
Yeah, sure. So I think the first thing is really important to kind of stick to a routine or establish routine early on. So normal bedtime, normal wake-up time, stick to morning and bedtime routines. I think most kids will be practicing virtual learning, so that'll be something new,
right?
But it will add structure to the day. And then I think, as you said earlier, utilizing this as an opportunity to spend time together as we're practicing social distancing, it can also be a time to be more connected and doing activities with the family, taking turns choosing what those will be. And I think lastly, parents just being connected with the news and as things develop, so that way they can communicate that effectively to their kids.
Dr. Janine Dominguez with the Child Mind Institute, thank you so much for joining us. Take care and stay healthy.
Thank you. You too.
All right,
bye-bye.
Have a good night. You're listening to the Karen Conti Show, and when we come back, we are going to be talking a little bit about travel. I know we've talked a lot about it, but this is kind of going forward now, how we're going to deal with booking travel in the future, and if you have those tickets, do you cancel them now, or do you wait until it gets worse or better? This is the Karen Conti Show on WGN. Welcome back. This is Karen Conti, and I don't have the coronavirus. Next, we're going to be talking about travel. And I'm going to Janine Tornatore, who's a nationally recognized travel expert, TV commentator, writer, and spokesperson, who's going to give us the up-to-date scoop on how best to handle your travel plans coming up. Hi, Janine. Welcome to the Karen Conti Show.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
You are so welcome. Let's talk a little bit about, what have you heard? Is there going to be a complete travel ban? You being in the travel business, are you hearing that?
I have not heard that. You know, what I think, you know, we're obviously seeing is, you know, the travel ban from an international perspective, and we've kind of seen that play out over the last couple of days. What I have been seeing is, I think, more and more people domestically, especially as we're approaching these coming weeks when a lot of schools have spring break, is people taking it upon themselves to kind of make that decision not to travel right now. My family actually just made that decision yesterday as well, to not leave on our spring break in the coming days. So I think the more that we're seeing, government from a state level and a national level talk about the need for people to social distance and stay at home, I think people are realizing that the really smart thing to do at this point is not to travel right now.
Now, as far as refund policies, I know that probably all the different airlines have different policies, but let's talk about how you go about finding out what your policy is for your particular airline. And then I'm going to ask you the same question about hotels.
Yes. Well, you're right. So, you know, while most airlines have some policy changes where they're waiving their cancellation and their change fees for flights, they do vary by airline. So just because you see something United is doing, you can't assume that, you know, if you're on a different carrier that they're doing the same thing. So number one, I would say head to their website. You know, you on their home pages, you will see a link directly to, you know, what they're offering right now for folks who already have flights booked and they either want to change them or want to cancel them. And I will say that, you know, for most of the major airlines, it's tough getting through right now to a customer service representative, especially with the international travel ban just happening a couple days ago. They're flooded with calls for people that need to make changes on an immediate basis. So if your flight is, you know, 5 days, a week, 2 weeks out, you may just wait a couple of days since we kind of just have that flood of travelers needing to make changes from the international side. Wait a couple of days before you make the call. Otherwise, you may be sitting on the line, you know, for potentially hours waiting to get through.
So, like, as far as hotels go, because, for instance, I have a trip to Key West planned next week, and I'm pretty much sure I'm not going to go, not because of the illness, but more like I've got to take care of things at my workplace. But the hotel I booked was a boutique hotel. It was not one of the big chains, and I'm not hearing back from them. What is the common thought? Are these smaller hotels not going to refund money?
What we're seeing a lot of hotels doing for those that aren't directly refunding is offering credits for a future stay. So, again, hotels, of course, there's so many brands of hotels out there, and independent smaller hotels, may do things differently than the larger chains like Marriott and Hilton. So, again, your best recourse is to keep trying to contact them directly, check their website to see if they have any information on there. And, you know, one piece of advice, whether it's your hotel or your car rental is, continue to ask, ask them and be proactive and say, what can you do for me? I would love to come stay here in the future. Can you give me a credit? Because I think, one thing I saw actually just anecdotally with our trip that we just canceled, we had to cancel our car rental and the rental agency that we were renting through, was going to charge us a $50 cancellation fee. And we kind of kept questioning, hey, really a $50 cancellation fee? And they ended up giving it to us as a credit because we were a little persistent about it. So I would say, be persistent, in accordance, with what you're comfortable with. But, I know that the travel companies are really trying to work with people. It is, of course, tougher for those small boutique hotels that are, more independently owned.
And one of the things that my husband and I were considering is also going down there. And what if they closed all the bars and restaurants in Key West? I mean, it's nice the beaches are okay, but what are you going to do when you're down there? So I think it's not just, is it safe? Are we going to be able to get a flight back? But what are we going to do if everything closes down?
Yeah, and I think that's one of the reasons, too, in particular, that we're seeing so many people changing their plans, in these last couple of days. Is everybody's been kind of, let's wait and see, because they know they can cancel if they need to. And things are just so rapidly changing, I think, that the same as people heading to the grocery stores and, stocking up on everything because everything is uncertain, that's another reason, too. People don't want to get to their destination, spend all of the money on, a big vacation, and then not have the experience that you're expecting. And so for most people, the safe route is, hey, let's just not go now. Let's wait, and maybe we'll go in a couple of months when everything is back on its feet.
And that's really probably the reasonable thing to do. Let's look ahead to travel in the future. I do know that there's some insanely wonderful travel deals going on right now for obvious reasons. Can you talk first of all a little bit about what you're talking about? Like, is there a flight that you've seen that is spectacularly cheap now?
Well, because flights are, 30%, of their capacity, they're just relatively empty right now. We're seeing incredible deals on flights. So for someone that may have to fly right now, there are definitely deals out there. I mean, I'm seeing airfare to most big destinations around the country round trip for under $100.
Wow.
New York, Miami, San Diego. Right. So there are definitely deals out there. And even looking ahead to summer, so even looking ahead to June, we're seeing similar deals. So for people that may not want to travel now. Maybe they're saying, hey, but let's go ahead and let's look at planning our summer vacation. I would say, you know, there are the deals out there to be had. What I would just caution folks about is making sure that you're checking with the airlines, that if you book those flights and you do need to cancel, because obviously this is a rolling situation and we are not sure an end date to it, you know, in the future, what is your recourse? Are you still going to be able to apply that, you know, no change or cancellation fee if you're booking something for a later point? So again, it's all kind of, you know, brand by brand, airline by airline, everything differs. So you just want to make sure that you're checking on those small nuances before you're taking advantage of those fantastic deals.
Sure. And, you know, I guess I always wonder about this question. I always question insurance because I hate to say this, but you buy insurance and then when the time comes that something happens, there's small fine print that says, oh, this isn't covered. And you don't know that when you buy it. You don't read the policy. Even as a lawyer, I don't read the policy. Tell me about travel insurance. Is travel insurance a good deal or bad deal? In what circumstances and what kinds of travel insurance would you recommend if you do?
Yes, and this is a big question right now because this is the time when a lot of people will say, hey, my insurance should be taking effect. So when we look at it in this situation, well, I guess I'll first step back and say insurance, again, kind of like you said, it really depends on, you know, a few factors, you know. Number one, how big is your trip? You know, how much do you want to spend on your insurance versus, you know, the total cost of your trip? So if I'm booking a huge European vacation that is, you know, one of those bucket list trips, I more likely may want to buy travel insurance because it's a high dollar trip. If you're just taking advantage of those quick weekend deals and heading away, it's probably not as worth it. In this particular situation that we're in, it's an interesting one because, you know, a lot of insurance policies will say if something is what they call a known event, then it's not covered by insurance. So, for example, most of the time, hurricanes are not covered. Those types of natural disasters that may be known events will not be covered by insurance. As of January 22nd, the COVID-19, they considered in the insurance industry a known event. So anyone that has booked most general insurance policies after January 22nd, COVID-19 would not be covered.
Wow.
Really, the only insurance policy where, you know, the fine print covers everything are these premium policies that basically are the, you know, cancel for any reason policies. And they're definitely premium price, but they do allow you to pretty much cancel for any reason. But for any other policies, I always recommend you have to read the fine print and really think about what might be the reasons that I need to cancel and does this look like it's covered. And then again, always contact them, talk to the customer service representative, ask them, you know, anecdotally, if this were to happen, would this be covered? Because they will be able to tell you that.
And I'm going to ask you one quick question, and that is, as a travel person, what's your favorite place to go? If you all the places in the world you got to spend 2 weeks somewhere, where would you go?
Oh, wow. Well, you know, interestingly, I'm a big adventurer, so I love the national parks. Those are my favorite places to go. I'll keep thinking, like, at the end of my kids being home for 3+ weeks in this situation, I think I'm just going to be looking for a great beach destination, to
that
be honest.
That sounds like everyone.
I think we're going to see a spike once this is over and people are heading to those relaxing destinations where they can kind of just lay back and you know, take it all in.
Janine Torrentaro, thank you so much for joining us. Where can viewers, listeners see you?
Sure. Well, you can follow me on social. I'm on Instagram at The Outside Insider, and my website is theoutsideinsider.com.
Thank you, Janine. You take care of yourself.
You too. Thanks.
You're listening to The Karen Conti Show, and next up is Jim Peterick from The Ides of March on The Ides of March.
Stranger in the black sedan, won't you hop inside my car? I got pictures, got candy,
In honor of March 15th, the Ides of March, I'm thrilled to have one of my childhood idols, born in my hometown of Berwyn and a lifelong Chicago resident, Jim Peterik. He's best known for his band Ides of March, which in 1970 had the hit song Vehicle, which you just listened to. And he was the founder of the band Survivor, where he co-wrote and performed the theme from Rocky III in 1982, which is not just a song, but as Wikipedia says, an anthem. He's won a Grammy, a People's Choice Award, and an Oscar nomination. Welcome to the show, Jim. How are you?
Hey, Karen, how are you?
So excited to have you on, and you are going to be inducted into the Illinois Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Very thrilled about that. You know, our ceremony, unfortunately, was postponed. You know, like everything else.
Right.
By the way, I just wanted to correct one thing. I was a former member of Survivor and a member of Survivor. You know, but I'm very proud of my days with Survivor and all the songs that I co-wrote for that band. But Ides of March was my first love, and we're just having so much fun, and we're so honored to be inducted in the Illinois Hall of Fame.
And it's in Joliet, right?
It is. It's going to be a great testimony to Chicago rock, which long overdue, I think.
And so tell me a little bit about the Ides of March. You formed it, and one of your big hits was, of course, Vehicle. And I love the story surrounding the words to Vehicle. Can you tell our listeners how it came to be?
Yes, I can. I wrote the song, here's the Cliff's Notes, Karen, to win back my girlfriend. I was dating this girl. I met her at RB High School, standing in line to see the Turtles in 1968. And we fell in love, and then she dropped me and said, you know, you're the first boy I ever dated, and I want to see what else is out there. And broke my heart. And I said, well, there's one way to win her back, and that's to write a number one hit song. And I wrote Vehicle, and it went number one. Guess who starts calling me again?
Oh.
And nothing succeeds like success. And 47 years later, she is still my wife.
Oh, I love that story. You would put lawyers like me out of business, but that's okay. That's okay.
So, you know, I wouldn't want to do that.
I know that you wrote Songwriting for Dummies in 2002, and you also have an autobiography through the Eyes of the Tiger. But tell me about how songwriting works, because how does do the words come first? Does the music come to the concept? Is the message first? Mm. How does it work?
Wow. You know, it's really magic in a way. You know, when they asked me to write this book, Songwriting for Dummies, at first I didn't want to do it because I never really analyzed what I did. And I figured if I analyzed it, it would disappear. But I went ahead and I really broke it down to what I do. And it really is a combination. You know, I'll be riding down the highway and I'll have my tape recorder. Well, now it's an iPhone at my side. And I'll be just, you know, free associating, and a melody will come in my head. And I remember writing the song, The Search is Over, and it started with a melody. Then I opened my notebook, which was on the driver's seat, and I saw the hook. I call them hooks. The search is over. And I had written that down a few months before, and I didn't know what it meant. But suddenly this whole scenario, you know, took shape, and I started thinking of the story of someone looking for their eternal happiness all around the world, only to come back home to Berwyn, Illinois, and find their true soulmate right where you started, and the search is over.
That's a beautiful song. I think we have to play. Ben, can you play a little bit of Eye of the Tiger, just because I want to hear it, okay? And then I'm going to ask you some questions about that. Ben?
Sure.
Oh, okay. Yep. He's got it right up there.
And we're waiting.
And we're waiting, Ben. Here we go.
There it is.
That iconic beginning. We know it's coming. We know it's exciting. We know. There it is. Punch.
There it is.
That's so great. Okay, so you have to tell me about how you get the call to write for this song for the movie Rocky III.
Oh, yeah. Well, I called the phone call that changed my life. Got home one day, you know, my home on in LaGrange, Illinois, I was shopping for groceries, come home, I had this big old answering machine, and I press play, and I hear a message from my sister, another from my friend, and then all of a sudden, hey, yo, Jim, that's a nice answering machine you got there. Give me a call. It's Sylvester Stallone. And I'm going, yeah, right. I'm not going to call this joker back. Someone's putting me on, I mean, why would Stallone call me and not have a secretary and all that, all that stuff? And I played it back for Karen, my wife, which I told you about. And she said, Jim, you better call him back. That sounds like Stallone. And I called him back and I said, this is Jim Peterick. Is this really Sylvester Stallone? Hey, Jimbo, call me Sly, So here's Jim Peter from Berlin, Illinois, calling my hero Sly. And I adapted pretty quickly. I said, Sly, it's such an honor to meet you. You're my hero. He says, well, you can be my hero now. I got this movie called Rocky III, and I don't want to use that Gonna Fly Now song. It's great, but I want something for the kids, something with a pulse. Can you help me out? I said, is the Pope Catholic? Yeah. And he sent us the rough cut of the movie, and I called up Frank Sullivan from the band. He's the guitar player at the time. And we set up this Betamax Pro and watched the movie called Lightning in a Bottle. And just we demoed it, and 3 days later, he gave us a whole 5 days to write it and arrange it and record it.
5 days. The pressure was on. Did the pressure help or did it hurt?
Well, it helped. I love that, that kind of challenge. And I remember I was a jogger. I still am a runner. And I remember running around the streets of LaGrange, brainstorming the lyrics to this song. And we went to CRC, Chicago Recording Company, recorded it in two takes. And when we laid that final down, the electricity was all over the room. We knew we had something.
Now, have you ever traded your passion for glory?
It's a cautionary tale. I never have. And, whenever I want some advice, I go to the words of my own song. And my favorite line, it's my best counselor. My favorite line, and the one I use the most, is rising up to the challenge of your rival. And we all have rivals, whether it's someone or something or cancer or whatever your rival is. You got to rise up, stand up to it. And that's, to me, the best line of the whole lyric.
Now, your obit, could it read, Jim Peterick wrote The Eye of the Tiger? If it does, is that okay with you?
I don't mind it at all. The alternative would be, Jim Peterick, the search is over.
There you go. Now, you've been successful for 6 decades. I know you're still doing all kinds of things, and we can go on your website, which is what?
JimPeterick.com.
And you've got all kinds of concerts and collaborations and things. Some of them have been delayed a little bit because of this outbreak. But I encourage you to go on because you're doing all kinds of really interesting things. But 6 decades, you're kind of a straight and narrow person. You never got into the booze and the drugs and the women. And you've been good businessman. What do you attribute your career that has been so long and so varied and so interesting?
Well, thank you. I think it's never taken anything for granted. The Ides of March all came from the same Berwyn Hood. I grew up on Oak Park Avenue. Larry was on Riverside Drive. Bob on Clinton. Mike on Winona. We had the same roots, the same Bohemian Czech roots. Our parents were great. They were very supportive. It was not a challenge to do what we did. They supported us, and we knew we could not misbehave. We were on the road at age 15 with a hit record in 66 called You Wouldn't Listen. And then when Vehicle hit, we had every temptation laid at our feet, partying with Led Zeppelin, partying with the Grateful Dead, Janis Joplin, on and on. We never, we never bought into it. We knew we had something better at home. Our roots were very, very deep.
That's so interesting because that's not the common situation. And at age 15, that's pretty young. And you see so many actors and so many talented people lose everything because they fall into the wrong thing. Understandably, fame and fortune too fast is difficult.
Well, I have to credit our parents. Yeah. They gave us a good, solid ground, and I thank him every day of my life.
You've written songs with for 38 Special, Hold On Loosely, one of my favorites, Lynyrd Skynyrd, Cheap Trick, Sammy Hagar, REO Speedwagon, The Beach Boys. Who are you collaborating with now, and what kind of music are you actually creating?
Great question. I'm developing a blues artist that I met many years ago, but now he's just about to peak. And his name is Anthony Gomes, G-O-M-E-S. I discovered him at Guitar Center selling me a guitar.
Oh my gosh! And, one of your 200 guitars.
Yes, but who's counting?
No, who's counting?
Larry and I, Larry Millis of the Ides, we flew up to Toronto to hear him, and blew us away. And now we're making a new record. And then there is Pride of Lions. When I left Survivor in '96, I created Pride of Lions, which. It's just an amazing band, and it sounds like a cliche. We're very big in Europe and Japan, kind of a well-known secret in America, but look out for Pride of Lions. New Ides of March album that came out in October called Play On, with many guest stars like David Pack of Ambrosia, Joe Bonamassa, the blues legend, Kathy Richardson of Jefferson Starship. Such a good record, and we're very, very proud of that as well. And now just a lot of shows, you know, and we're getting rescheduled with a lot of our shows right now and putting them off into May and June, and it's all going to be great.
One last quick question. What do you like the most? Do you like the collaborating? Do you like the writing? Do you like the performing? Do you like touring? What is it that you really love right now in your career? What's your favorite part of your day?
Well, great question. You know, I missed most of the 80s being on the road. I missed my family. And luckily, I got off the road in about 1988. Karen got pregnant. We had our son, who's 30 years old now, Colin Peterick, and is a great musician and doing great. But I couldn't do that slog again, where I would just be week after week, month after month on the road. And I like what I do now. You know, touring mainly on the weekends, coming home to the family, writing, producing, living my life. That's what I like now at age 69.
Jim Peterick, thank you for joining us, and tell everyone again where we can find out what's going on.
TheIdesOfMarch.com. Put that T-H-E in the beginning. TheIdesOfMarch.com, JimPeterick.com, my Facebook, the official Jim Peterick Facebook page. And, man, thank you, Karen, for talking to me. It's been a real pleasure.
It's just really, really my pleasure. And growing up in Berwyn, you're a legend. So it's so exciting.
Well,
and I'm going to see you at the induction. I'm going to find out when it's delayed until, and I'm going to be there, and I'm going to be cheering for you.
I will be looking for you, Karen.
Okay, Jim. Take care.
Thank you.
All right.
Bye-bye.
You're listening to The Karen Conti Show on WGN. Welcome back to The Karen Conti Show on WGN. Jim Peterick, thank you so much for joining us. What a delightful guy. You know, a guy who's had that much success in the music business and yet is so normal and so nice and married forever and from Berwyn, my hometown. Wonderful. I've got a few things that I want to talk about in the next 10 minutes or so. At 8 o'clock, we have Jill O'Brien, who's an expert in employment law, and we're going to be talking about this new law that the federal government just passed a couple of days ago, actually a day ago, that's going to really change the world for millions of people. And we still don't know a lot about it and how it's going to actually work in effect, but there's some real interesting provisions that might help you or a caretaker that you might have, or a family member. So I think it's important to get to know a little bit about what that's about. And then I'm going to be taking your legal questions at about 8:15 or so, the usual number, 312-981-7200, or text to that same number, and we'll taking all kinds of legal questions on any topic whatsoever. Question for Karen from the texter. My nephew is getting married on 4/4/20. As many guests can no longer attend, do they have any legal rights to get part of their money back if they still proceed with the wedding, but less people that attend? Thinking of the reception, also if the venue closes or other areas like flowers or church pull out, can they get their money back? You know, this is something that is sort of on a case-by-case basis. And what I would really worry about is now they're having ideas as there's going to be bans on certain gatherings in excess of certain number of people, like I've been hearing in excess of 50 people. So if the venue has more than 50 people, that might not go forward. what I would start to do is to look at all the contracts, look at the contract for the flowers, look at the contract for the venue, and see what the outs are. And, you know, you see words like act of God or force majeure. Force majeure is normally speaking a man-made, unexpected situation like war or strike or terrorism. And act of God is generally a natural disaster like a hurricane or a tornado. This would probably be an act of God, but that's not always in the contract. So you're going to really want to look at it and see what your rights are to cancel, see if there's cancellation fees. And again, as we spoke with the travel expert, a lot of this is going to be negotiation, that you want to call that venue and you might say, listen, people can't come. This is a disaster for all of us. I would hate to lose everything. But can you please give us a credit and let's do this wedding perhaps at a later time where it's safe enough to say that people can travel to get there and you can make these contracts and it's going to go forward. The best thing to do, as the travel lady said, is to be firm and to be assertive. And if you're not that kind of person, get somebody on the phone who is. I know a lot of people don't like to ask for things and they don't like to be demanding. I personally am a lawyer, and so I do that for a living, so I have no problem asking for things. The thing that I do say, though, is to be nice, because no one likes to deal with the jerk who's demanding and saying, you have to give me my money back, and maybe that's not the case. So I think you're going to, what is it, more flies with sugar than vinegar, I don't know, whatever that phrase is. That's what you should do. You should be firm. You should know what your rights are by looking at your contract and reading it. If you have to call a lawyer to get a quick read on it, that might be something that... Oh, my gosh. Sorry. And... I would say, but I would say be nice and be considerate and know that the people that are answering your phone, are also stressed out. They're getting all kinds of calls from bridezillas and people who have spent tens of thousands of dollars, and it's really an unfair thing. But that's my best advice to you. Couple other things. We were just notified, I believe it was Saturday morning, I woke up and saw it on my email, that the Cook County courts are closing, and they're going to be closed through the month, I think maybe even through mid-April, if I'm not mistaken, and I assume some of the other Collar County courts are following suit. So I think that... you know, I'm being asked a lot of questions about how this is going to impact pending cases. So the answer is, I have no idea. But here's what I do know. The cases are in court and things are scheduled. So the things that are scheduled in the next 30 days are not going to happen. So you should call your lawyer, email your lawyer, and you probably don't even need to ask her the question. You just need to say, what's going to happen now with my case, and see if they know anything better about what's going to go on. But suffice to say, if you have a traffic ticket or you have a date in court for your divorce, that you're probably not going to go. Well, you're not going to go. And we don't know when everything is going to be continued until. And here's why. Things that are, there's a trial date coming up next week and you can't try your case, and you have a case coming up in September, let's say with a trial date in September, well, probably neither of those is going to go forward. You're going to have to continue everything that's set now, and then that everything is going to jam up that September date, and everything will probably be kicked over another few months. So even if you don't have a case that's scheduled right this very minute, and you have something scheduled down the line, don't assume that that's going to go on, and you're going to want to talk to your lawyer. The thing that I'm telling my employees is that I can still work on the case. I can still work on settling matters. I can still work on resolving things. 95% of all cases are settled. So it's not that we need the courts to resolve our disputes. They help. And if we have issues that we want to bring to the court, obviously the courts are there. But if they don't, that doesn't mean that we can't still resolve people's cases. My understanding also is that there are going to be certain emergency judges that are going to be available in the event of true emergencies. And I don't mean emergencies like, I didn't get my child support yesterday and it was due 2 days ago. So... it's going to have to be something very, very urgent that is almost life-threatening, I would imagine. Which brings me to another situation, and that is child support and support payments. Say you are divorced and you are making child support payments or maintenance payments, formerly known as alimony, and you have certain obligations. Let's just say you lost your job or you are a bartender. And now that we're going to have closed restaurants and bars for a period of time, you're not going to be earning anything. You'll be earning some unemployment probably, but you're certainly not going to be earning what you did before. What do you do if you can't pay child support? That's a good question, and there's no great answer. First of all, I would call up the ex, or better yet, email the ex and say, listen, as of Monday, I'm unemployed. I'm going to be applying for unemployment compensation. A portion of that will go to you, which is true. If you have dependents, portion of it goes to the dependent child and the caretaker. But it's not much money at all. It's really, really not much money. And the problem is that you can't really file a motion to reduce the child support because the courts, I suppose you could file it, but you're not going to be able to go to court. So maybe what you do is you tell your lawyer, if you can afford a lawyer, to ask them to file a motion to abate or delay the child support until you get your job again, because then that it will be retroactive to the date you file. Just understand that if you've got an order for child support, which usually it's a matter of court order, and you're not paying it, you're in violation of the law. It doesn't matter that you lost your job. The law is the law until you change it. The order is the order until you change it. So you're going to need to put on file some sort of motion to stop the child support, at least to make a record that you're not flouting the law, that you are doing, you're not paying, or you're paying a little bit only because you can't. And let me tell you this, if you have savings and you have other assets that you can use to pay child support, the court's going to be very mad at you that you don't take out some of those savings to support your children. Certainly, this is a hard time for all of us, supporting ourselves, supporting our children, very difficult in these times. But imagine you're the spouse that has maybe the majority of time with three children and you're not paying her anything or him anything, can be a real disaster. So consider that, and consider that you don't want to be held in contempt, and pay a little bit, pay as much as you can. And hopefully when all of this blows over, you know, you'll be in a better position to make it up. Hopefully that will be good advice. Coming from the 773 area code, do you believe someone should be charged or sued with negligence if they go out in public while they are sick? Could we see this in the future? You know, a good question, and I've heard this question on the in the workplace. If the employer knows that there are people who are sick or doesn't tell people who the sick people are in the workplace, I get that question. Is it confidential? Employers just don't like to tell people who left the workplace because they're sick. Is there some liability? Well, the problem is you'd have to prove that you got the virus from the workplace. That would be very difficult to do. So in essence, that lawsuit probably wouldn't be one that would be sustainable, just because you'd have to prove. You'd have to prove that that employer or somebody was negligent. And going out in public, again, how would you prove that the person who went out in public caused you to be sick? And negligence, the elements of negligence, I'm getting lawyerly here, but you have to have somebody who's doing something that is negligent, meaning that is not up to the standard of care, careless or what have you, and that it causes damage, and that it wasn't reasonable what the person did. So here, how are you going to prove that that person caused damage? And if it's a potential damage, that's not enough. It has to be actual damage. There has to be an actual catching of the virus. So again, who knows what's going to happen in the future? There might be bans on people going out. I know that's what's going on in Italy, but lawsuits attendant to that, I'm not sure. Another thing I just wanted to mention is that I guess our elections are going forward, and they're Tuesday. And I always say that a lot of people don't vote for judges, or they don't think it's important. And let me just say this, of all our elected officials that you're going to be voting for, it's much more likely that you are going to come into contact with a judge than, say, any of the other elected officials, in that those people, yes, they do affect what laws get passed and what goes on. But you probably are more likely to be involved with a traffic judge or a divorce judge or a small claim judge or somebody who's judging something that you have in court or something that your family has in court. So please make an effort to go to voteforjudges.org, print out the sheet. It tells you who the judges are that are recommended, highly recommended, not recommended, and bring it into the polling place with you, because no one can remember the names of these people. I don't know these judges, and I don't know these lawyers, and I've been practicing for 34 years. So please do that. Make your vote count. And it's a very easy thing to do, because a lot of people have spent a lot of time vetting these people and coming up with a very good and a very just a very pervasive, comprehensive analysis of who's good and who's not good. When we come back, we're going to be talking more employment law and the coronavirus with Jill O'Brien. This is the Karen Conti Show at WGN. The federal government is passing a new law, Families First Coronavirus Response Act, to help Americans and employees in particular deal with this crisis. But will the bill really affect you, and how? With us to discuss the employment law aspect of this bill in the times of COVID-19 is Jill O'Brien. She's a partner with the premier employment law firm in Chicago, Lehner Muchin. Welcome to the show, Jill. You've been on the show before. I appreciate you coming back.
Thanks, Karen.
So let's just talk generally before we talk about this new law. Can your employer tell you to stay at home and work from home?
Yes, the employer can do that right now. So there's some proposed changes that, you know, may take effect as early as tomorrow. The Senate is expected to, you know, vote on a bill that was recently passed by the House of Representatives. But as of now, an employer can say, I want you to work from home. In fact, many of our clients are saying, we are going to close the office for business, and we want to require employees to work remotely to the extent they can. But of course, not everybody can.
And so what does the employer have to do to accommodate somebody to work at home? Are there certain things that an employer here in Illinois, does he have to pay for certain things that you use at your home office, which is now becoming your home office?
Yeah. First of all, from a pure pay standpoint, as of right now, and again, this could change tomorrow, but as of right now in Illinois, for an hourly employee, somebody who's considered non-exempt, they only get paid for the time that they actually work. So if they are working from home and they're doing, you know, their normal schedule, their normal work, they would get their normal pay, even though they're no longer working in the office, they're just doing the work from home. That's a little bit different, a lot different, rather, for salaried employees, for exempt employees. Those employees are paid on a guaranteed weekly salary. So if they're working from home, and or if they're not able to do their work because their work has to be performed from the office, they're still entitled to receive their guaranteed weekly salary in most cases, with very few exceptions. So if it's hourly, you get your pay only if you're working. If you're salary, you get your continued guaranteed weekly pay. The other thing to keep in mind, though, and I think you hit it, and that is some of these expenses. If there is, and this is a relatively new law in Illinois in terms of requiring employers to reimburse employees for costs of, you know, just regular business expenses that are incurred that are required and necessary to perform their work. So if I'm required to maintain a laptop computer or a printer or a fax machine or a scanner, those are required and necessary for my job. Those are things that the employer would be responsible for reimbursing me for, at least, the portion of the cost that's attributable to my work.
I had this question asked of me. A salesperson was saying, listen, I can't travel. I can't do my sales. Do I get a break when it comes to a commission and bonus schedule, or am I stuck with the same commission schedule? Does my employer have to change it to accommodate this new terrible situation?
Yeah, that's a great question. You asked, does my employer have to? And the answer is no. From a legal standpoint, an employer does not have to tailor its bonus or commission structure for that circumstance. What I'm seeing is I think that we can expect that some employers will do that. And what they might do is they might consider adjusting that time, particularly if this new, if the proposed bill passes, where people will be able to take, employees can take approved leaves of absence if they're getting either medical attention for themselves or a family member who might have been exposed to the virus, or if a doctor said that they are in a high risk situation where, you know, they shouldn't be in public or they shouldn't be at work, either because it might harm themselves or it could harm some others who they come in contact with. And under this new bill, there's even a proposal, a feature that would reimburse employees, even if there is no medical situation involved, but it's simply a matter of employees needing to stay home to be with their young children who aren't able to go to school or their, you know, their child care facilities.
So before we go to this, to this new law, I just want to talk just from a practical standpoint, because you've been doing this a long time, and I have a theory about this. If you are dealing with your employer on these issues, how, you know, your employer wants to accommodate you probably if you're a good worker, right? And your employer is going through a lot of strain right now. And my theory is when the employer's under strain, don't complain, because it's a problem. But you can talk to your employer and you can ask your employer to accommodate you. And if you're nice and you try to work something out, it can be done. It's just when I think employees get mad and they get angry and fear is anger and they start making demands, that employers become upset and stressed out, and that's when the deal may not be, no one can come to a deal when they're both angry. Do you have some advice to people on how to deal with your employer?
Well, I think, and I have to tell you this, I don't want to sound like Pollyanna, but my experience is that employers really are bending backwards to be reasonable here. Everybody knows that there's going to be more guidance, but for now, they are being reasonable. They are being flexible, and that's really all you can suggest is instead of saying you have to go to the doctor because you're, you know, one day late, they are, you know, being more flexible on those kind of things. But when you're talking about things like bonuses and commissions and pay and whatnot, I think that the best advice I can say from an employer standpoint is, yeah, cooperate, work together, give and take. I might need Tuesday and Thursdays off because those are days I'm not going to be able to have child care help, but I'm going to volunteer to stay later, you know, on Wednesdays and Fridays when I can do my part. A lot of employers are asking employees to band together and they're forming committees for this purpose. And I've seen a lot of companies have real good luck with, you know, every other day arrangements even, or, you know, skeletal workforces where, you know, some people work early shift and, or, you know, the first half of the day or the second half of the day. And I think, again, you hit it on the head, and that is just being flexible and reasonable. Nobody likes somebody who comes in with an entitlement. You know, it's not my fault that this happened. Well, it's nobody's fault. This isn't about fault. This is about making the best of a very difficult situation.
Jill, can you hold us with us on the break? I want to ask you, we didn't even really get to the new law, but I do want you to touch on the points when we come back. Can you hang with us?
Sure.
All right.
Yeah.
You're listening to Karen Conti's show. I'm talking to Jill O'Brien with Lehner Muchin about the new employment law. Back to the Karen Conti Show. I'm here with Jill O'Brien from the law firm of Lehner Muchin. She's an expert in the area of employment law, and we're talking about a new law that is likely to be passed by the Senate this week. Jill, thank you for holding on to us. I just want to tell anyone if they have any questions for Jill or for me, 312-981-7200, or text to that number, 312-981-7200. Jill, let's talk about this bill that was passed in the House. Tell us from just on the employment level, not it had some other whistles and bells when it comes to testing and that type of thing, testing for the virus. But what are the bullet points of what it mandates for employers?
Okay, so there's two key features, I would say, from an employment standpoint. One is a significant expansion of an existing law that's referred to as the Federal Family and Medical Leave Act. Essentially, under the federal law, which has been around since 1993, employees are entitled to up to 12 weeks of leave of absence, and it's considered job-protected leave of absence if they need to take time off due to a medical condition or to go to a doctor or to get treatment, whether it's due to a health condition of the employee themselves or an employee's family member, if they're caring for somebody who has a medical condition that qualifies as a serious health condition. So this is a law that's been around, and employees are entitled to up to 12 weeks off in a 12-month period for that purpose. So that law has been expanded both in terms of who is eligible for it, what employers are covered, and also for what circumstances would trigger somebody's rights under the Family Medical Leave Act. So first of all, under the old existing law, an employee is only eligible if they've worked for a company for a full year. That 1 year is waived, and now employees would be eligible to apply for approved leave of absence after only 30 days on the job. Originally, under the Family Medical Leave Act, employees would have to meet a threshold hours of work requirement where they basically would have had to have worked 1,250 hours to be eligible. That no longer applies. So they could be eligible right away, even in part-time status or temporary status, after working only 30 days on the job.
Wow.
So that certainly expands who's covered. And then what's important about this is the definition of family member. So certainly if an employee needs time off on them, you know, for their own condition, they're entitled to take time off. But the family member definition also was expanded. So it would be normally you can take the time for your parent, your spouse, or your child up to the age of 18. That has also been expanded now to cover, again, assuming everything is passed and signed as the law is proposed now, would cover siblings. It would cover parents-in-law. It would cover domestic partners, people who live together. You know, so it's a really broader definition of when I can take time off. The thing to keep in mind, though, also, if I am eligible for this expanded FMLA, I would be entitled to 12 weeks of time off, and my employer can't be mad at me or can't hold it against me for purposes of, you know, you really just carve that out as if I was working on those days that I was taking approved FMLA. So while on FMLA, even under the expanded law, the existing law, it's unpaid FMLA. That also will change under the proposed law in this way. So under the expanded Family Medical Leave Act, there's a 14-day waiting period where employees don't get paid. They are on approved leave, but they don't get paid for a 14-day waiting period. Then as of day 15, and again, this is up to 12 full work weeks, as of day 15, I start getting 2/3 of my regular pay, which is a nice deal. Obviously, it's a bad situation that would cause me to need time off for that, but it really is intended to help the families, help the community, so that people do stay home when they're sick.
Now, I just want to interject this. It's really a big change because, you know, the FMLA, as you said, was just leave, which means they would have to sort of, you know, guarantee your job when you came back, but there was no duty to pay. And now it's going to change it to, after that 14-day period, it's a 2/3 of your salary for a 12-week period. That's a really amazing benefit. But I want to ask you, Jill, if let's just say that Governor Pritzker or somebody says, okay, no one can go to the workplace. You can't go to your office. You can't go to your job. Everybody has to stay at home. Would this kick in? It's hard. I mean, I know it's hard to ask you this because it's a brand new law. We haven't seen it tested out yet. But FMLA has to do with taking care of someone who's sick or taking care of yourself. Is just you all have to stay at home enough to trigger this really wonderful benefit for employees?
It may or may not be, and I hate that lawyer answer, but from a first standpoint, if, let's say, the governor, as you said, requires everyone to work from home, if I'm working from home, Karen, I'm not on leave.
Right.
I'm just simply, that's geography. I'm just getting, you know, performing my services at a different place, but I'm still getting paid. This would be above and beyond that. This is above and beyond any existing sick leave rights that somebody has. So, for example, in Chicago, Chicago employers and Cook County employers already have to provide employees 40 hours of paid sick time for each year. So this is above and beyond that. If somebody needs time off due to this coronavirus symptoms, or because they themselves have it, or they're caring for a family member, or again, this is also somebody that maybe they're perfectly healthy and everyone in their family is healthy, but they have a child who's under age 18 that can't go to school. And they are simply providing, you know, I don't want to say babysitting, but they're with their child. And of course, there's arrangements being made through the Board of Ed to make sure everybody's still, you know, taking their classes from home. But this is not only for a medical condition. So to answer your question, yes, if the governor says work from home, that does not trigger the leave, the expanded leave under this federal proposed bill, because they're not on leave, they're working. There is a separate piece of this, though, as well, that I haven't mentioned yet, and that is paid emergency sick leave. So even though I said the FMLA law would be expanded and there's a 14-day period before you start receiving your two-thirds of pay, another feature of this bill is that employees would be entitled to 80 hours of paid time off, emergency paid time off, for that same reason. And certainly you can imagine it would probably be used at the outset. Somebody would bridge the gap between the 14-day waiting period. So more than likely, if I needed time off, I would use my emergency paid sick leave to be at home, and then I would go into the unpaid status for the remainder of the 12 weeks if, you know, I really had a medical need for that much time off.
This is a kind of a complicated area, and I think as we go on and the law does get passed, as we expect it will, but we're not quite sure if it's going to be the same exact version, I think this is something that's very important that you all look into if these types of things are going to affect you, and I assume it's going to affect a lot of people. Mike in Chicago has a question about restaurants. Hi, Mike. Welcome to the show.
Hi, I was just wondering if the state or that we have to close, are they going to do anything for the owners that food spoilage?
That's a great question. I haven't seen anything, Karen. I don't know if you have. What I neglected to mention, though, is that there is a provision in this proposed bill that does allow for a tax credit for employers so they can recoup this money down the road. There are certain caps, and they're not going to get every, you know, penny on the dollar. But I don't know the answer to that, Karen. Have you heard of anything?
No, and I guess I'd like to talk about the issue generally. And again, we're sort of on uncharted grounds here. So you've got one of the experts in the city here where that we're talking to, and we just don't know. But let's just say the restaurants are going to close down. And I really feel for what the bartenders and the waitresses and the wait staff people, they largely work on tips. I assume that the owners are still going to have to, under this law, there's a possibility that they're still going to have to pay these people, right?
Correct.
So, but that amount is very limited, and it's usually under minimum wage, is my understanding. So the question is, are they going to have to pay what they would be receiving in tips? Do we even know that?
I haven't seen anything address that, Karen. I'd be speculating. But I can tell you that Illinois in particular is very sensitive to the hospitality industry, and they really do tend to have rules and, you know, specific regulations that apply only to, you know, the hospitality industry, restaurants, hotels, et cetera. I personally wouldn't at all be surprised if that's the result.
I mean, I agree. And it's just so, you know, dramatic. I mean, I've just heard people talk about, you know, their mortgages foreclosing and because people work on tips. And, you know, I don't know. I mean, there's going to be unemployment available. And I know that I think this bill actually put some money into the states for unemployment. But as we know, unemployment doesn't really give you, you know, exactly what you're making. And it's a stopgap. It's not really something that you're meant to live on. But
well, and adding another feature to that, that hit me upside the head today, I was in a Uber and a driver said to me, you know what, this is the worst time that this could be happening because this is when I do work overtime because I want to save up for my taxes that are due next month.
Right.
So now people are going to be driving when, you know, even if they are sick. I mean, I hope that's not the case, but it's really bad timing on top of this.
Well, and I was on a cab coming here and the man was crying. He says, I support a family of six, including an elderly mother, and I pay a huge amount of rent for this cab every day. I mean, he pays $100 a day. He's got to make $100 before he makes a cent. And he said it's going to be just a few weeks before I'm broke. And you know, this is, you know, whenever you think you have a bad situation, I guess there's always somebody that has a worse problem. But I guess, and I had a texter from the 312 area code say this is difficult for employees to navigate. Do you think, Jill, that there is going to be some easy to use, user-friendly kind of explanation of what these laws are going to provide somewhere so that employees don't have to consult a lawyer. I mean, even employers don't even know exactly what they're supposed to do. How do employees get to know what their rights are?
Yeah, well, the good news is part of the proposed bill is a requirement that a simple user-friendly poster be prepared within 7 days. So assuming it's effective tomorrow, we would have some user-friendly communication within a week.
Oh, that's good. Jill O'Brien, thank you so much for joining us. Jill is a partner with Lehner Mutin. If anyone wants to get in touch with Jill, where would they reach her?
So my direct dial, or our office number is 312-467-9800. There's 45 of us attorneys, and this is our area of expertise. So if I'm not available, you can reach any of us. But I can also be reached at my email, joBryan@Lehner, LanerMuchin.com.
Thank you, Jill O'Brien, and stay safe. You're listening to The Karen Conti
Thank
Show
you.
On WGN. For any legal question you might have, it has to be with the coronavirus, that's fine. Or any other question or problem you have, legally speaking, I will be happy to try to guide you in the right direction. 312-981-7200 or text to that same number, 312-981-7200. If for some reason you'd rather talk to me at the office or email me at the office, you can always reach me at my phone, 312-332-7800, or better yet, email me with your details, not too many details, but just enough where you are, what county you live in, and what your issues are, when it happened, and what you're looking for. And you can email me at WGN@AskKarenConti.com, WGN@AskKarenConti.com. So you'll be calling here. Ben will take your phone call. You'll give him a quick rundown on what the story is, and I will try to get you on the phone. I'm looking at a texter from Cindy from Alsip, looking for some legal help regarding family issues. My mother died. I'm sorry to hear that. Left money to me in a joint account I've been on for 5 years. Family's trying to recover the money, feeling entitled. Now also claiming I took advantage of an elderly person with a disability. I had a beautiful relationship with mother. Others weren't there for her. I was a good and faithful, loving daughter. Please help. Judge told me to get a lawyer. I can't afford a lot. Oh, I hate these issues. I'm going to make some assumptions here, and my guess is that there's no will or no trust. The mother died without leaving something to guide the courts or guide how things would be divvied up. This is a lesson. I don't care how much money you have or how much money you don't have. You need a will and trust. An estate plan is what we call it, and it's worth the money to pay a lawyer to do it. And then the other question is here, left money in a joint account. Is the joint account an account that was titled in both mom's name and Cindy's name? If that's the case, the money goes to the other joint holder. So whenever you have a joint account, if I have a joint account with my husband, I could conceivably go to that account and take all the money out because I'm a joint account holder. Same with you, Cindy. When your mom died, you then became the owner of that account. So it seems to me, unless I don't know something about the facts here, is that you're entitled to that. And the idea that they are saying that you took advantage of an elderly person with a disability, when did your mom put that money in the account? Was it at the end when she was really disabled and didn't know what she was doing, or did she put it into the account a long time ago when she was certainly in her right mind and knew what she was doing? All of those facts are very, very important. Are you being sued? Do you have to defend it? The judge told me to get a lawyer, so it sounds like you're in court. There's a bunch of facts here I don't know. How did it get to court? Is there a will that is being probated? Meaning, is that will in court now, and are they accusing you? Or did the family members sue you personally? I need to know all those facts before I give you an answer. But again, Oh, it's so very important to get this done right. I can't help but just mention it every single time I'm on the air because I see these horrible things. In a lot of cases, there's not a lot of money involved, but there's anger and there's jealousy and envy and there's family disputes and one person's taking care of the family member and nobody else is around and now they come out of the woodwork and want to get their share and it's just a mess. And I just hope that at least, Cindy, if you want to email me, at my office, WGN@AskKarenConti.com. I'm happy to give you a little bit more advice. Let's go to, is it Charmin? Charmin, hi, welcome to WGN. Hi, do you have a legal question? All right. Hi, are you there?
Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead. What's your legal question?
Oh, yeah, my question is actually, I work in a warehouse, which is an airline jet warehouse, and we're about 300 people work there. How is this going to affect us as a money-wise? It's because there is no work from home if you work in the warehouse.
Right. Yeah. And if are they telling you that you can't work because there are 300 people in the warehouse?
No, they're letting us work for now, but I'm thinking about the future if they decided that everybody should just lay off.
Yeah.
Well, or they're going to shut down the warehouse. I mean, we cannot work from home.
Right. And all the things that we were talking about with the prior guest about working remotely is fine, well and good if you have an office job where you can work remotely. But yes, you're right. Someone like you or someone who works retail or someone who
Correct.
Works in a place where they have to go to work, you can't do that remotely. Like those rules aren't going to apply. So this law actually that we were talking about, this new law that will hopefully for you be passed this week, will really help you in this because you might be able to use it to get some good pay for at least a 12-week period. So if I were you, I would really watch out and there will be posters posted in the workplace within about 7 days and it will tell you what your rights are when it comes to getting these benefits. Okay? That's my best advice to you. All right?
All right. Good. Thank you.
Good luck to you.
Appreciate it.
All right. Give us a call here at 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. I had a texter ask me, what do you think about the Harvey Weinstein sentence of 23 years in prison? It was kind of an anticlimactic sentence this week, what with all the other news here. I have to tell you, I am not a Harvey Weinstein fan. I think that 90 Women Don't Lie. I think what he did to women over the years is atrocious. The fact that it hasn't come to people's attention, the prosecutor's attention, earlier is a shame. I'm sorry that women had to have that kind of bad stuff going on. That being said, what he was actually convicted of by this jury and what the sentence he got seemed very much out of proportion. I'm not saying I feel sorry for him. I'm not saying I'm going to donate to his defense fund. I'm just saying that I think that this sentence was very much a public statement by the judge that he said words to the effect, this is his first conviction, but it's not his first offense. And I think that the judge took into account the history that this guy had with all these women over decades of time and punished him for all those things for which he was not on trial. And judges can do that to some extent to make a point, to send a message. But on the other hand, is it fair to someone who was convicted of what he was convicted of to do 23 years in jail, which is essentially a death sentence given his age? I'll let you come up with your own opinion on that. And if you have an opinion you'd like to share, 312-981-7200. Let's go to, Sharon. Hi, Sharon. Welcome to WGN. Hi.
Thank you. I am a 70-year-old woman. I work 40 hours a week in an office. There is no way I could work at home. And from what everything I've been hearing this weekend, I'm kind of afraid to go into work, and I'll tell you why. I happen to have emphysema.
Okay.
And I don't know what... Truly, I don't know what to do here. I don't know if I tell my employers that I won't be coming in for 2 weeks, if, you know, I would be in danger of losing my job.
Oh, this is a hard one.
I don't know.
Yeah, this is a hard one because you might be entitled to protection under the American with Disabilities Act. And that requires, in order to qualify, you have to have a limitation of a major life function. Would emphysema be such a disability that it would impair that? And the fact that you are at risk for and more at risk because of your age and because of your emphysema, is that something that would make your employer have to accommodate you? How big is your...
My doctor has emailed me today and said, in the condition your lungs are in, don't go to work. And I'm like, well, that's easier said than done, you know.
Do you think that your boss would fire you if you said you had to take 2 weeks off?
I don't think so.
Okay. You know, my best laws are going to be changing. I mean, literally, they may change tomorrow. I would get that doctor's note. I would figure out from the workplace what your rights are with this new law. And perhaps they can put you on leave and you can get paid a portion of your salary during that time. You can probably take the first 2 weeks of sick pay, according to this new law, and then maybe take the 2/3 pay for the 12-week period. Again, I don't know if it's going to pass. I don't know exactly what it's going to provide. Is it going to cover your precise situation? But I would prepare yourself by getting that doctor's note to say that you are at special risk because of your age and because of your medical condition.
Okay.
Okay.
Right.
I hope that helps. And good for you going to the office every day, working 40 hours at 78. Bravo. I love it.
Thank you. I enjoy every moment of it.
Well, good for you. And you staying young, I can tell.
Thank you so much.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Let's take a break and we're going to come back. I've got some other callers, Jeff and Glenwood. I'll get to your calls, 312-981-7200. This is the Karen Conti Show on WGN. Welcome back to the Karen Conti Show. I'm continuing to take your legal questions here at 312-981-7200. I'm not sure I can answer every single one of those coronavirus questions because we're on new uncharted grounds here, but I'll do my best to give you my common sense answer. Jeff and Glenwood, welcome to the show. You have a question about how the new law will affect commission-based jobs. Is that your question?
Yes, it is, and they more or less told us that they would first take our vacation time after any sick time is used, and then they would give us an additional week off with pay. But they really didn't specify whether it's, you know, hourly or salary or commission, how they're going to actually split that up.
Well,
is commission covered?
Okay, so your job may be affected by this potential new law that might be passed tomorrow. So your employer is offering you some deals here, but the deal that the federal government might impose on your employer, depending on the number of people who work at your job, and interestingly, this law doesn't apply to over 500 employees. So the smaller businesses are the ones who are going to be giving these benefits, by the way. And so you're going to want to look at this law. They're going to post something on the wall, and you're going to look and see, and the federal government might mandate something better than what your employer just offered you. So that's the first thing I want to tell you. Second is, my guess is that it's not going to apply to commissions. We don't know, though, from reading the law, and I did do a quick review of the law and some of the analysis from the other lawyers who have done a full analysis of what was intended by the legislators. We haven't gotten to that yet. That's a good question, though, because I imagine that, are you a commissioned lawyer, a commissioned employee?
Yes, I am, and the employees are less than 300. So we would be affected by that law.
So you would be affected by the law. So the question is, do they have to pay you your commissions that you haven't earned because you're not working? My guess is going to be that the answer is no, that the employer is just required it, under whatever provisions that get passed, are going to be what they have to pay you. And that if you're not earning the commissions, you're not going to be paid on them. But again, you're going to have to review what is posted at your workplace. You're going to have to discuss this with your employer. And I bet that you have to, and I also think you need to be constantly looking on the internet to see how these things are being interpreted and what language in the statute will help you with that, because that's a big difference. I understand that a lot of people get paid a very small draw and then their base is not something they live on. It's the commissions and the bonuses and the that basically sustain you. So the answer is I don't know, but my guess is that it's not going to be covered.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right. Well, good luck to you.
Thank you.
Sure. Let's see. Oh, I had a texter who asked, is it legal for a state to close its restaurants and bars? And I guess assuming implicit in that question is why do they get to do that? Basically, it's a police power issue, and the 10th Amendment to the Constitution gives the states rights and powers that are not delegated to the federal government. So basically, the police power can do things to regulate the safety and well-being of the people in the state. And it's a very broad power. And we don't see it exercised a whole lot, but when it comes to seatbelt laws and when it comes to things like that, where the laws that you say, what is the basis of that? Do we have a constitutional right not to have a seatbelt? No, the government through its police power, the states through its police power can basically make laws and rules to protect the safety of people. And in times like this, when we have threats of great sickness and pandemic, it's been called a pandemic, and it's an international problem, certainly the states have a right to do what they're doing. Do we like it? No. Do we like any of this stuff? No. But I think what I'm trying to do, and listen, it's affecting me. It's affecting everybody in different ways. I don't think it's affecting me as badly as it is affecting other people. But I'm trying to be patient. I'm trying to say that it will be over. The quicker that we all comply with these things and stop the spread by not going out and not being out in public and doing these things, then, you know, maybe it'll be done with and maybe we can move on here. And I think that one of the things that I'm looking at right now, just from a personal standpoint, is how are we going to spend the next few weeks if we are not working or if we're working from home? How are we going to change our lives for the better? And how can we use this time productively? I think a lot of people wish for time off and wish for time at home with our family, and now we're going to have it. So maybe now is the time to pull out the board games and to pull out, you know, your computer and take that class in how to speak basic Spanish or learn a hobby, or you watch YouTube videos about, you know, how to change your oil or whatever it is that you've always wanted to do, but you've never had the time to do. This might be the time to read that book, cull through your clothes in your closet, clean up things, and spend time with your family. And hopefully that doesn't make it better from a financial standpoint. But I think that the government seems to be willing to pass some laws that are going to help people kind of bridge this gap. And I hope that they do as much as they possibly can. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Let us go to, I had a question this week about whether or not, family law. So here's the question. We talked a little bit about child support, but the question that apparently, this is a very common question. A lot of the ex-spouses are planning on a spring break and they want to take their child to Florida or somewhere like that. And the other spouse objects and says, you can't take this child of mine on a flight, that's endangerment. What would the courts do about that? Well, first of all, we don't have any courts. So at this point in time, we really don't have a place to go for this kind of grievance. There's supposedly two judges that will be sitting on any given day who will hear emergencies. Is this an emergency? My guess is that it's not. My guess is that the judges are going to reserve emergencies for truly life-threatening kinds of things and issues that need to be resolved. Otherwise, somebody is going to really get hurt. And so the question is, can you withhold your child because you don't want your child to go to that trip? Well, you have to look at what your latest court order is. And the court order says that your ex gets to take your child on spring break this year. Then you would be technically violating the law if you allowed, if you didn't allow your child to go. That being said, you're a parent, and if you really believe your child is in danger by having the child taken on an airplane, then you have to do morally what you see fit, and you're going to have to take the consequences on the other end. And I would just hope that I would hope that you and your ex could bind together at this point and talk to each other about it and agree that, let's say it's a he, like he can take the child on a break later in the summer when things get better, and that, you know, you can compromise on what can be done, and maybe the child goes with him for the week and they stay at home, and then he gets to take the child on a vacation some other time. I mean, that would be a nice resolution. The child gets to spend time with dad, and everyone's safe, and the vacation can happen at another time. Now is not the time to fight. There's no good places to have those disputes resolved. And even if you call your lawyer, which you can, and your lawyer might be able to work it out with the opposing counsel, it's really not the time and the place to be arguing about these types of things. I have a texter who says, what's the name of the law that we should be keeping an eye out for? Oh, and I'm going to grab that from my briefcase in a minute. And that law, it's titled for the HR, and I'm going to give that to you in a minute. It's called the Families First Coronavirus Response Act, and there is a very good but sort of detailed legal summary of it at the Lehner Muchin website. And at Lehner Muchin is L-A-N-E-R, Muchin, M-U-C-H-I-N. It's called the Families First Coronavirus Response Act. And there is a very, it's a pretty detailed six-page article. It's probably user-friendly. It's a little probably a little bit more for lawyers, but it does give you the exact who is covered, how is it covered, who are the definitions, what does it mean, how much, who's covered as far as spouses, domestic partners, parents, and it's pretty comprehensive. So hopefully, as time goes on, there are going to be other postings that are maybe a little simpler for the layperson, but that's a good place to start, hopefully. All right. And let's see. Let's go to, do they really see an end in sight with a reasonable time frame? Could this last for many more months than they are saying? Why did this not happen with SARS and other diseases, H1N1? You know, I don't know the answer to that. I'm a lawyer, and I don't know the answer. I wish I did. It just seems to me that this one is more virulent, and this one is grossly international, and we see what other countries are doing as far as Italy goes, and from all of the people that I've spoken to, the infectious disease people at Northwestern, I've been on some panels on Fox 32 in the morning, and some of these people are saying, listen, this is just, you have to contain it. If you don't contain it now, we just don't have the resources to test. We don't have the resources to treat. And even though it's a gross inconvenience for us, think about the gross inconvenience of thousands of people dying on a long-term basis. And the longer we wait to start this containment, the longer it's going to take to resolve. That's all I know. And I don't know the difference between the diseases and what makes this one worse. But there you go. That's all that I know. 312-981-7200. We have Jim, who's holding. Jim, hi, Jim. You have a question for me, for a legal question.
Yes, ma'am. I got a family question for you.
Sure.
My son and my daughter-in-law got a divorce.
Okay.
We have a grandson with those two, and we maintained a relationship with my former daughter-in-law because we want to see our grandson.
Sure.
My son got remarried. His new wife found out we maintained a relationship with them, and now she's refusing to let us see our second grandson, to the point where my son recently terminated his parental rights with my first grandson and basically told the judge when he terminated him, I don't want my parents to have any rights to see my first son, which the judge basically told him to go pound sand. But now we're wondering, why is there any way we have or any recourse we have with the second grandchild to see them? I mean, is there a way that we can go to court? And
so
we want to see our grandson. They're not allowing us.
So here's the question. Is your son still married to this woman?
He's married to the second wife, yes.
And this is but that's the child. The child with the second wife is the one that you want to see, and you can't.
Right. Correct.
So the law is for grandparents' rights is really poor. Okay. And I'm sorry to say this, but I'm going to quickly tell you that the only way that you can assert grandparents' rights is if the parent, the parents are separated, or okay. the part one of the part your son is in jail, or your son has passed away, because if the two are together, the law presumes there's a good reason not to let that child see you. That's a really unfortunate situation to be in, because unless you are a harm to your grandchild, every child needs grandparents, and it's just heartbreaking to hear this. So I'm going to take a break, but if you want to reach me at my office, 312-332-7800 or WGN at AskKarenConti.com. Thanks to all my guests.